Of the day is State versus Warburton. State versus Warburton.
Thank you. Can I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Jared Murphy. I'm standing in for John Eisenagle today on this appeal. I represent Mr. Warburton. We have 3 issues in front of the court today on a criminal appeal. The 3 issues being that we believe that the trial court erred in overruling the appellant's motion to suppress. 2, we believe that the appellant was denied effective assistance of trial counsel by the counsel's failure to file a timely motion for new trial. And then additionally, we argue that the trial court excessively sentenced the appellant. With our first assignment of error, we argue that the trial court improperly found, 1, that the officer pat-down of the appellant was proper. Looking at the facts of the case, my client was in possession of a vehicle that was pulled over. When he was pulled over, the officers came and immediately put my client into handcuffs. While he was in handcuffs, the officer immediately patted him down. We believe by looking at the Bill of Exceptions that the court improperly found that at that point in time that there were specific facts and circumstances that the officer could believe that there was any danger to him. Additionally, if you look at the Bill of Exceptions, the officer did state, "I immediately arrest and pat down anyone involved in a shoplifting incident." I think that that testimony alone shows that this is not a permissible Terry stop pat down. And then during this pat down, the officer found something that was plasticky. Something that is plasticky is not automatically and immediately apparent to be criminal or contraband. Looking at the Terry stop and the second tier situation that we have here, for the officer to be able to remove something from my client's person, from Mr. Warburton's person, there would need to be immediately apparent that the object was criminal, was contraband, or was dangerous, such as brass knuckles, or in one case, such as Craven, a spark plug that felt like a marijuana pipe. Here, we have something that was plasticky. There was testimony that stated in his training and experience that drug dealers occasionally keep drugs in plastic bags, but we believe that that is not sufficient evidence for the officer to establish and remove that from his person. When the officer found out that there was when there was a plastic bag in his pants, the officer asked him then at that point in time, what is in the bag? It is our contention that at that point in time, our client was subject to custodial interrogation, that he was arrested at that point in time, that there was an officer, multiple officers present, that they were conducting a criminal investigation. So I don't believe the state can test that he was in custody for Miranda purposes. The question becomes whether or not it was an interrogation. It is our belief that it was an interrogation. It was an initial statement or initial question by the officer, but at that point in time, there's already a shoplifting. Shoplifting was already reported. They were trying to figure out exactly what occurred at the Walmart, why my client didn't pull over immediately for the 3 to 4 blocks. At that point in time, a criminal investigation was underway, and we believe that that statement that was elicited by that question should be suppressed. My client did respond that there was methamphetamine in that bag, and then from that, the officer removed that bag and found further methamphetamine.
Kind of step back here for just a second. Starting at the beginning,
yeah.
First of all, the testimony of the officer that they had a report of a shoplifting at the Walmart.
Yes.
And then he was able to match the license plate of the vehicle he stopped to the vehicle that was identified as having the shoplifter in it. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so then while the car doesn't stop right away,
yes.
And the officer has the lights and everything, sirens going. I don't know if sirens, but at least lights activated, correct?
Yes.
And while this 3 blocks is going on, he's observing your client, who's the driver, and then the passenger reaching down and moving around a bunch and things that made him concerned for a couple of things. 1, that they may be trying to hide things, and 2, that they may have a weapon. Is that what the testimony was?
That is what the testimony was from the officer.
So now, are you, you're not contesting that there was probable cause or at least reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle?
Yes, we're not challenging the initial stop of the vehicle.
Okay. And so then when the stop is made, does the passenger immediately, well, they tell them why, the police tell them why they stopped them, right?
Yes.
So does the passenger immediately admit that?
So the passenger does, in the course of that investigation, immediately admit that she did shoplift from Walmart.
Right.
So at that point in time, the investigation, the scope of the investigation is strictly on the shoplifting. And they did not have any other evidence at that point in time, and it is our position they didn't have any other evidence at that point in time to expand the scope of the search.
But does that give them a right to search the vehicle, looking for shoplifted items?
At that point in time, I believe from the Bill of Exceptions, they were able to locate the shoplifted items. I would need to have further review of the Bill of Exceptions, but I believe they're able to locate the shoplifted items.
By searching the vehicle?
By the passenger voluntarily handing over those items. No search of the vehicle had occurred at that point in time. And at that point in time, if we take a step back or step forward, if you will, my client was convicted of distribution of 14.99 grams of methamphetamine. Most of that
possession with intent.
Possession with intent. Most of that methamphetamine was not found in the vehicle. It was found on his person. So the search of the vehicle, whether or not it may have occurred or whether or not they could have occurred, is sort of a separate issue as to whether or not the methamphetamine found during our contention illegal Terry stop could still be suppressed.
So are you arguing that once the passenger says, well, here's all the items I took, that the officers have to stop at that point? Just have to trust her that she's giving them all the stuff?
I'm not arguing that. I mean, if the officers then search the vehicle, they have the opportunity to search the vehicle at that point in time. But what I am stating is that the search that occurred that found the evidence that convicted my client was on his person. It wasn't in the vehicle.
But when they searched the vehicle, in plain view on the driver's seat, was some meth, right?
There was testimony that there was possible crack or possible drug rocks on the on the seat, which then led to a further search finding scales and so far, so on and so forth. However, it is our position at that point in time that a search of the vehicle wasn't conducted. A search of the vehicle, the officers were mainly focused at that point in time on searching my client based upon the fact that there was a theft that occurred earlier. I understand that the court is, my guess is, leaning towards an inevitable discovery doctrine, but I don't know if there's enough evidence or if that was enough in the Bill of Exceptions to justify the state's argument that anything would have been inevitably discovered upon it. And basically, our argument is that the Terry stop or the Terry pat-down was not proper, that feeling something plasticky, feeling something is not a weapon, it is not immediately contraband, and that has led to a statement, it led to the search of the vehicle, and then primarily what his conviction is based upon. And I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, Nathan List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. I am similarly going to focus on the claim regarding the denial of the motion to suppress. This presents two issues on appeal. Number one, whether the pat-down of Mr. Warburton was lawful, and number two, whether his pre-Miranda statements were unlawfully obtained. We maintain that Warburton is not entitled to relief on either claim. As far as the first issue regarding the pat-down of Warburton, we maintain it was justified by the circumstances, including the fact that Warburton and Paulson were involved in a shoplifting incident. They didn't pull over right away and kept driving for several blocks as Officer McLaughlin attempted to pull them over. And Officer McLaughlin saw a lot of movement prior to the vehicle finally coming to a stop, including the female passenger moving a lot and doing something near the floor of the vehicle, all of which concerned him enough that he drew his firearm as he approached the vehicle. All of this information taken together or considered collectively, we would submit provided a reasonable suspicion for the pat-down of Mr. Warburton. It was clearly justified in our view. We also maintain that the scope of the pat-down was lawful. As set forth in our brief, it's well established that an officer conducts a lawful pat-down and feels an object whose incriminating nature is immediately apparent. A warrantless seizure of that object is justified under the Plainfield Doctrine. Here, as the record reflects, while conducting a pat-down of Mr. Warburton, Officer Garrels immediately noticed that Warburton's shirt was not flat, it wasn't sitting right, and upon feeling around the waist area, he felt something plasticky. He asked, which he, based on his training and experience, believed to be drugs. He asked Mr. Warburton, what he got here, and lifted his shirt, and Mr. Warburton said, meth, at which point...
So how about that? Is that an interrogation? What's in the bag? The question?
Is that an interrogation?
Right.
Actually, I think it's when you asked if there's anything else.
Well...
And maybe I jumped ahead there, I'm sorry.
If we're going to jump ahead, I guess we're jumping to the Miranda.
No, let's answer Judge Reedman's question first, and then mine.
I think it's a close call. If we're going to go ahead and just move to the Miranda issue... Obviously, for Miranda, we have to have a custodial interrogation, two parts, custody and an interrogation. In terms of, I guess we can just walk through both components here. Do we have custody? Well, for someone to be in custody for Miranda purposes, they have to be, would the ordinary person feel free not to leave? Our case law makes clear that, our case law as well as SCOTUS case law makes clear that typically in the context of a traffic stop, that's not custody for Miranda purposes. This, it has to rise to something more, typically to the degree of a formal arrest, at least in the context of a traffic stop. Did we have that here? I don't know. To me, it's kind of in between. It's not a garden variety traffic stop because this clearly was more right at the outset, but does it truly rise to the level of a formal arrest? I don't know if I'd go that far. It's potentially with the nature of the encounter, immediately pulls him out, says, I knew you were up to no good when I saw you earlier, immediately cuffs him, immediately starts a pat down. You could argue it either way. As far as whether this is an interrogation, which is your question, again, I'd say that's a close call as well. An interrogation is looking at whether or not somebody, the officer is asking something that would likely elicit an incriminating response. If you have already cuffed him, telling them they're up to no good, immediately patting him down, thinking there's something there and saying, what is this? That's a close call. I mean, I think given the circumstances, one could certainly argue that's likely to elicit an incriminating response. But with respect to the Miranda, since we're discussing that, I guess in the end, I didn't brief it because to me, it just didn't matter, given that even if the pre-Miranda statements could have been, the pre-Miranda statements could have been suppressed in this case, it doesn't lead to the exclusion of the physical evidence under the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in U.S. v. Patain. The physical evidence, i.e. the meth found in his pants, still comes in at trial. So we have the physical evidence itself as, coupled with his post-Miranda statements after he's arrested that the meth belonged to him. Both of those things, which were both lawfully obtained and properly admitted at trial, we would submit justified or warranted the conviction in this case and any error with the pre-Miranda statements, if there was any error here, was clearly harmless. Additionally, as set forth in my brief on the Miranda issue, we would submit that the inevitable discovery doctrine applies here because the meth would have been discovered anyway, even without the pre-Miranda statements. The record reflects that the officer searched Paulson's purse as well as Warburton's vehicle as part of the shoplifting arrest for purposes of identifying the stolen items, and during the course of that search, they found saw the meth in the driver's seat of the vehicle. That meth would have been lawfully seized even without the pre-Miranda statements, and in turn, Warburton himself would have been searched given that he was in the driver's seat when the vehicle stopped. All of this would have been independently and lawfully seized even without the pre-Miranda statements. So we would submit that the inevitable discovery doctrine would apply here even if there were any problems with the pre-Miranda statements. So for either or both of those reasons, we would submit that the pre-Miranda statements, any error with the pre-Miranda statements was harmless, and the motion to suppress was properly denied on that claim. And we would submit that it was also properly denied with respect to the pat-down. We don't see any error with respect to whether that pat-down was justified, nor do we see any error with respect to the scope of the pat-down. As far as the remaining claims, I believe I'll submit those on brief. I don't think I have anything to add to my brief regarding the motion for new trial or the excessive sentence claim.
Mr. List, for the benefit of our audience, can you explain what the sentence was that was imposed and your argument in that regard?
Yeah, there were two convictions, possession with intent to deliver 10 to 28 grams of methamphetamine. The statutory range there is mandatory minimum of 3, maximum of 50. Mr. Warburton got 15 to 30 on that. The second conviction was for possession of drug money. I don't recall the statutory range off the top of my head. I believe that's a class 4 felony, but he was sentenced to 2 to 2 years for possession of the drug money. Both sentences were within the statutory limits. For those who aren't aware of our standard of review, we review the sentence imposed by a trial court for an abuse of discretion. It has to be something that's clearly untenable. We would submit that there is no evidence in this case or no indication that the sentence imposed was an abuse of discretion. These sentences were within statutory limits. There's no indication that the court considered anything improper or out of bounds in carving out a sentence. So we see no abuse of discretion there. The motion for new trial, I can elaborate on that if you'd like me to, but I don't intend to unless the court has any questions.
I don't think so.
If not, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Murphy have remaining?
1 minute 25 seconds. I would like to briefly address just the last two portions of our claim, the motion for new trial. As submitted on the Bill of Exceptions, my client requested his trial counsel to submit a motion for new trial. That motion for new trial was not filed timely. I believe it was filed 2 days after the fact. Then that motion for new trial was withdrawn. The motion for new trial was submitted upon the sufficiency of the evidence that we believed at that point in time that under the bench trial that there was not enough sufficient evidence to support the claim. And then additionally, as far as the excessive sentence, the state has gone over the sentence my client received. If you look at my client's criminal history and age, he is 55 years old. He was sentenced to 15 to 30, and then 2 more years on top of that. He will be well over 70, or he could be 70 to 85 years old by the time he gets out. If you look at his criminal history, he had a significant period of time where he was a law-abiding citizen. We believe that the trial court focused on 5, 6, and 7, but did not give appropriate concern or cognizance to the fact that he was, that this wasn't a violent crime, that my client was extremely helpful to his own detriment during the investigation during this point in time. And so we'd ask the court consider also not just granting the motion to suppress, having the new trial, and or also having it remanded for excessive sentence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Just as a housekeeping, Mr. Murphy, have you filed an appearance? I didn't see your name on the notice of appeal or on the brief.
I have not filed an appearance.
When you get back to the office, can you send one in?
Yes.
Thank you. That concludes our arguments for today. Counsel, you're excused. We're happy to answer questions from the audience if you have any regarding the court system, procedure. The topics of today's cases are off limits, but we're happy to talk with you about anything else.
And I think do we want them to step up to the microphone if they have a question? Yeah, step right up.